Right. I would have posted the original article on social media. And the persons were in agreement with what I had to say. But important as well was the fact that some persons messaged me. Because I think sometimes what I am not seeing, especially from the minister, is the impact of which not getting a check means to people. It means sometimes that you can't feed yourself, you can't feed your children, you can't actually go to the doctor, and you may have health issues, and we talk about non-cumulative diseases, and that impact on our social services as well. Right. I would like the opportunity just to read directly. It's very short and no names were called, something that was messaged directly to me. Because I want to read it verbatim as much as I can, simply for persons to understand and highlight the pain to which you can hear in the person's voice. She doesn't know me. I think it was just a matter of that I would have said, look, I don't just like and share and comment. I would like to hear stories that are out there as well. It says, good morning. I have a question. I've received two checks from the NIS for the first 2 months, totaling $2,347. After that, I didn't get anything for the next 4 months. Only last week, I received another check totaling $92. You know the NIS deducted the first 2 months' money from the third check. My question is, why have they deducted the first 2 months' money from the third check? What I don't understand is why take back the money and how do we get back the money for the first 2 months? So what they're saying is people like myself would only get $2,000 and change for 5 months that we've been home already. I don't understand. Can you shed some light on it? Because she was actually speaking to me. And as I said, you can hear the pain in the person's voice in terms of no explanation was given. Online, there were several comments. There was another person who indicated that they have been on, I think it was disability, and they are getting $290 every 2 weeks. And they were told when they went back that it wasn't actually calculated correctly. The person calculated it incorrectly, but there seemed to be no resolution to the issue. And as I said, there are persons who've mentioned stuff that have been going on from 2013, 2015, and I don't think that these are incorrect from because I've heard several stories from other persons who don't know each other. So it says to me that these are correct indications of what is actually going on.
Okay.
I think that to the minister and to the persons who are head of the NIS, it needs to be more information that's given. It needs to be, especially any time that we're in, and it needs to be more indication of saying, we know that we're backlogged, this is how backlogged we are, and this is what we're doing to actually correct it, and not just placing things within the paper for sure, because that's all I can say at this point, that is for sure. Mm. And there are people out there that actually need checked.
Right, and the system is currently overwhelmed, and from what you're saying, it seems that it was overwhelmed even before this time period that we are in.
Right, so overwhelmed within any crisis, if it was this or it was something else, you're going to get a system that's overwhelmed, yes. But for any initiative such as this, what you usually try to do is make sure that you keep your current activities going and up to date. You usually need to bring in additional resources to deal with the upsurge of the issues that you will have, while at the same time dealing with any backlog. So as I said, the crisis didn't create this. The crisis only showed up the information, the inefficiency. And it's resources that are necessary. But simply projecting that it's fine while knowing perfectly well that you have issues and there are people that don't have a voice that are feeling the issues because they don't have a voice. So when a minister is in the page, saying that everything is fine. The person that can't see their children and can't buy medication, no, it's not fine, but they don't have an avenue. So it's very unfair for that to even be happening. Admit that there's an issue and speak to it. That's the first part of fixing this, you know, right, that it has to be admitted that there is an issue and then seeking to get the resources for a time being to deal with it. And that's okay. How any crisis situation, any change initiative, any transformation of what is going on there needs to be done.
There is another dimension to it, and that has to do with credibility. If you project something as working well, but you have too many people who are saying something to the contrary, it therefore means that any information that you give them later, they will have a doubt about whether it is credible or not. And the credibility is central to being able to mobilize and motivate people in a country. And sometimes people in decision-making positions take this thing lightly, especially as politicians.
Yeah.
You can get the impression that they like the idea of being able to dipsy doodle and dance and make you think that they're smarter than you and stuff like that. But you pay a high price for it.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, because I think that was the downfall of the previous administration. And I'm seeing the same indicators that nothing has actually changed and we're still down the same line of pretending that everything is okay. Under any article regarding the NIS, there's always a slew of comments. And you can't miss them. If you as a minister really wanted to know the true indicators, so even if your people were telling you, because that happens, your people may tell you that everything is fine, but you see indicators that everything cannot be fine. But do not, as a minister who is holding to the public, buy into it and then project it out when you know that you are seeing too many indicators that it can't be.
You say you're Dr. Cynthia Wiggins?
Yes.
What's your area of specialty?
Change management. I have a doctorate with a focus on content marketing, but I also am a Lean Six Sigma Black Belt, which focus on improving companies, and I am a change management certified as well.
And certainly the NAS needs change management.
Not just the NAS.
Well, not just them, but
at this time
with what, they say 40,000 people unemployed, then certainly there is a need to have special attention paid to the NAS. And the question, which I suppose is relevant, is what additional resources have they been given? You have indicated that is one of the first things that you have to look at.
Right, that is one of the key things. That if I have not seen any, because I would have expected to see, sometimes they may have hired internally, meaning that they would have not had an ad or a vacancy out. And that was one of the things that I'm not seeing. And at this time, there's no way, because more than likely what they're doing is that if they keep the core persons that they have there, they are doing exceptional overtime. And if they are, it's going to start to break down the persons that are there, because you cannot go overtime for any extended period. It's going to start to wear and tear. So you actually need more resources, because you need to increase your capacity, as I said, dealing with the things that are as a result of the crisis itself, while making sure that the backlog, the phones are answered, the emails are answered, the portals are manned, and those aspects are dealt with while you are dealing with the increase in the issues that are coming about. And if there is documentation that you don't have, you have to deal with that. And I have not seen anything that has shown me that they have asked for more resources. Maybe they have. But from the indicators and from what the minister would have said, I cannot think that they're dealing with it very well.
Well, you said quite a lot, and there's a distinct possibility that there are others who will call later who may want to interact with you. What I will ask you to do is to leave your contact details with the producer, and if necessary, we'll come back to you. All right?
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you as well. We have quite a few people who have responded to some of the earlier comments about, and this is on the WhatsApp, about the meeting with parents on the reopening of schools. One of the people has informed me that the Barbados National Council of Parent Teachers Association is currently inactive, so no PTA can be represented at this level. There are others who are asking for a town hall meeting and other forms of engagement. It seems as if those who have contacted us who are parents are not at all satisfied with the current approach of the Ministry of Education to interacting with parents. So that's just to confirm some of those views. And there are some other comments about buses. One individual has noted that this is a straightforward issue of 33 buses being procured by the government of Barbados.
It's a straightforward issue?
That's what...
Well, in the context of what the caller said, it didn't sound... And they spoke about an exchange that certainly didn't suggest it was just a straightforward issue.
I think the problem is that we don't have the details, so we can't confirm whether it is straightforward or otherwise.
Right, so all we're asking for is those details, you know? It's not to condemn the government, because you don't have the details.
Good morning. Down to Brass Tacks.
Welcome to the program.
Yes, hello.
Yes, stats man.
Yes,
I kick for today.
right. The goodly doctor in the studio, I heard her said something about democracy.
Yes.
Speaking about the Jamaica elections last night. I disagree with her entirely.
Okay.
Democracy is not about the voters turnout. Democracy, in fact, if you check democracy, it's a form of government in which people can, underline the word can, vote for representatives to govern the state. Can.
All right.
So the mere fact that you can vote, that's democracy. We don't have democracy in Cuba, in these other places where the people can't vote, right?
Well, so, they vote, but they vote in a different way. But that's a different discussion.
That's showboating, really.
Okay.
Right. So I disagree entirely with this.
All right.
So your concept then last election that it wasn't democracy or it was a threat to democracy?
Well, like I said, it raises questions about how democratic this process is, because you have a government that's supposed to represent the entire country. And if you have 38% of those who are eligible to vote showing up, who has given a mandate to this government?
But the people,
a very small proportion of people.
But as I said...
And why is that? Why is it that people are not showing up? Is it just COVID-19 or is it COVID-19 and maybe that people are disenchanted with the entire system?
Globally,
mm-hmm.
you got disenchantment. I guess too that when people are accustomed to things or could easily get things to do, you evaluate. Like, say, for instance, I remember well when the people in South Africa was able to vote. The masses in South Africa was able to vote for the first time. I think that was in 1994 or so. You had rings and rings of lines going all around the building that had to extend voting. Because you know what? That's the first time they had it. Mm-hmm. So you could also use a scenario with Barbadians. Barbadians have to see all around us and certain things that we have in Barbados that we basically don't even consider. But when you leave the country and you go overseas and you come back to Barbados, generally people are going to get a CBA, they want some of the cheese, they want some red juicy. These are things that they're sort of missing now. They're out of Barbados.
Uh-huh.
So I don't what is obviously all over the world is at a basically a low.
But I think you're just confirming what I'm saying. What does this mean for a democracy if people are
not going
to participate
in
one of the most basic procedural matters surrounding, not the only thing important about democracy, but if they're not going to participate in that, what does it say about the health of democracy in Jamaica and perhaps in other places too.
No, but I'm saying that that doesn't mean that you don't have democracy, but the people are not motivated to vote.
Okay.
You will go to probably, that's a different question altogether.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Stats, man, because people can give you a high voter turnout, and in between elections, they can feel left out of decision-making too. And I think one also has to factor in the organs within a society that provide the opportunity for that kind of interaction, so that we can then claim that we do have a vibrant democracy that goes beyond voting every 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where does that leave Jamaica right now? I mean, part of the problem that I anticipated was COVID, because their numbers are soaring.
Yes,
and people will be afraid to go out. And therefore, many people, apart from what voter apathy there might have been,
mm-hmm.
many people would have been afraid to go. So once the turnout is this low, how does the government create these opportunities for those who voted for it, and those who voted against it, and those who didn't vote at all?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't go there. Our government should not go there and run a country for those who voted for or against or didn't vote. You should run the country to the best of your ability.
Yeah, but democracy suggests that there will be times when the government needs to be responsive to what people are asking of it. And those things can change from time to time, can't they?
But you could get a high turnout, voter turnout. Okay, let's say, for instance, let's go back a little way to the last government, right?
Right.
Okay, the last government had a two seat margin on the administration, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't respond to anything either. They really didn't respond to Barbados or their causes.
So I don't think I'm juxtaposing the two, that something in Barbados is better than what's happening in Jamaica. The question is about how healthy democracy is. And there's another question that I would raise about Jamaica, which is that this election was called 3 weeks before, and this is in a pandemic where people are afraid to go out. How can the canvassing occur properly? I mean, for me, there are some significant questions raised about this. And as Mr. Ellis said, what happens after the election? Are there opportunities for people to be involved in what is happening in the country? I certainly hope that there will be in Jamaica. I hope that there will be across the region as well. But I do think that it is a bit worrisome when you have such low numbers. And considering the COVID environment, I really questioned why an election needed to be called so early in Jamaica.
I mean, come on, it's in the hands of a president to call election any day
it
that
is.
He see possible. Or even like Mr. Arthur ran the country. I can remember, in fact, Mr. Sandiford called election about 2 years prior, before it was due. Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur, that's why he did 14 years instead of the 15 years over 3 terms. He called election at 1 year, a year. Sure, that's in your hand. That's in the prime minister's hand. It doesn't have necessarily to be something cynical about it.
But I think in this case, we can ask some questions, though. 3 weeks during a pandemic, I mean, how much time do you have to prepare properly to instill the confidence in people that they can actually safely go and vote as well in this? There are a lot of questions it raises for me. But you don't have to agree with me.
No, I'm not.
You're entitled to your opinion. I just think it is really
Trinidad
tricky.
Trinidad and Tobago, Suriname had elections. You had another election somewhere in the Caribbean. American election is coming up in November. So you can't allow a pandemic not to have elections.
Yes, but the elections in Jamaica were not due.
But he's entitled to call elections when he sees fit.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, I think we can continue to have these kinds of discussions. Right now, we need to go to a break. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Thank you for your call. Good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As far as the schools are concerned, I can remember hearing the acting person in charge of education in the Ministry of Education saying, I think it was even in news this morning and yesterday evening, mm-hmm. that the things are not yet written in concrete.
That's right.
And that they're going to be reaching out to all the stakeholders and all their publics to make sure that they are fully informed, even though the dates are near. But, you know, from time to time, just the same visit, yeah, they had a date too, mm-hmm. that was branded about. But next, in a few releases, the date get put back to some other thing. So I guess that they will eventually talk to those parents that are there. And they're not two parents, they're quite a lot of parents to talk to, so that's something that one has got to get their hands and minds around. The teachers are there are many teachers too, but not as many there are not as many teachers as there are parents. So that's something that mm-hmm. I believe the Ministry of Education is working on. The
okay.
other one
we
is
hope they
that,
are working on it. Go ahead.
They're working on it. I heard the lady came out this morning and said that. Mm-hmm. The other one thing is that there's a community in Barbados called the disabled community. And from time to time, one hears about the whole question of the protocols that are involved for persons who are, well, I guess, there's no attention seemingly coming out to say how some disabled people should be treated or could be treated, especially now that there is a little leverage in terms that you can go up places and play whatever you want to play in terms of buying whatever you want to buy or whatever. Oh, I am wondering, for example, and I heard this on the BBC some time ago, the whole question of the persons who are blind, the whole question of the persons who are visually impaired, those kinds of persons, I believe the Ministry of Health should put out some kind of guidance or some kind of protocols as it relates to those kinds of people, because they are members of our community as well. And it would be useful to give some guidance. Because you might be a disabled person, it does not necessarily mean that you cannot. There's certain things you can still do outside, but with guidance from the powers that be, at least, you know, if you're not hearing impaired, somebody can still tell you something what they say if you're hearing impaired. So that's something I would like to hear the persons who are in charge of the protocols, and I know they just put up one yesterday, how those kinds of people should react. For example, mm-hmm. you hear about sneezing in your elbow and all that kind of thing. But if you sneeze in your elbow and somebody that's visually impaired going well on your elbow, you know what happened.
Yes, these are interesting points. I've seen some, there are masks that are being sold. I don't know if they're being sold in Barbados, but that have clear openings so that people who need to lip read can actually see. Because with all the wearing of masks, there are some people who are less able to communicate because they rely on seeing facial expressions and lip reading in order to be able to engage with other people in society. So I think your point is very well made. We do need a lot for our disabled community to ensure that they are included, they're part of this country and the society, and we should not create any policies that do not think about the needs of people from this community.
No, sorry, look at that myself. And the other question about national insurance is this. From time to time, they need to do a lot more, because I've been one of the advocates for saying that they should have their public relations persons really step up to the plate from time to time and let you know what is going on. But I believe it would be fairly difficult, based on what the doctor was just saying earlier, Doctor for Change.
Yes, Dr. Wiggins, I believe the name is.
As far as her degree is concerned, yeah. Mm-hmm. What one has to, you just cannot just go and pick up anybody, especially at this time, and say, all right, come in here, I want you to do this job. There still has to be training involved for those persons who are going to come in to understand anything that is complex as far as the national insurance program is concerned. You've got to go and probably learn about what is what has to be done. So that's a process that also takes some time to get involved in, and then we have to move people from, and then you can't back up some people, because that building is very full of people already, so you got to transfer them somewhere. So there are lots of 40,000 people on the breadline is not true.
It's true. So you're saying there's also, there will be a kind of lag between the employment of new people and their ability to assist?
Yes, there's a lag. There will be a lag. There will be a lag. The most you can do is to say, give some post people that go home and say, this is a list. Call these people and tell them, well, your check will come out on such a time or something like that. But you cannot just pick up people and say, come in this office and have us do the work before giving the necessary training. It will exacerbate the situation, in my view.
Okay.
In my view. And then when I hear the Nazis sometimes come out, they talk about employers not having the you apply for your benefit, and the records do not, sometimes the records don't lead them to providing that benefit for you. And that would be an individual thing between National Insurance and the client, because the employers sometimes do what they feel like doing and don't fill out their forms and don't send in the remunerations as they should. So those are lots of things that exacerbates the situation, and one has got to look at that very, very carefully.
Right. So you're saying it's a more complicated situation, and you have some sympathy with the NAS then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So I think that when I come to Jamaica,
yes.
Well, that's something else. That's something else. I mean, I can agree with you in part that, I mean, to win the election with that kind of percentage going out there is something that one has got to now sit back and observe what will happen in that community. So until such time, have a blessed one.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. Have a great day. Good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First, let me say something to David. Huh? Is he listening?
He has just stepped out of the studio, but I'm listening.
I would first like to welcome, and this is what they want to tell David. I would first like to welcome you as a new moderator, because I do believe he is training you.
Maybe that's what he's doing.
I hope he's listening.
I hope he is too.
Right, because I do hope that you would not abandon David like the last lady that he had training.
Oh, well, let's not say abandoned.
Yeah, she did abandon him in the middle of his training.
Well,
now, I'm so proud to welcome you, though, on a serious note.
Thank you.
And you really sound as though you were really, really, really fitting.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I hope that I do.
Yeah, you sound like you'll make it.
Y'all have to bear with me because I am new here, so I'm feeling my way through today especially.
Yeah, I recognize.
So are there any comments that you want to make apart from this lovely and warm welcome?
Of course.
Yes, sir.
Now, I heard a caller who spoke to you concerning the discussions with Ministry of Education, and he said to you that there's nothing coming from the ministry concerning teachers or so. I'm sorry, the parents.
Right.
You remember that caller?
Yes, I do.
Now, the minister, not the ministry, the minister is on record.
Yes.
Of saying, just like the meetings that they had with the teachers, there also would be meetings with the parents and the ancillary staff of the various schools. That's what the minister said.
I think the question is, when will these meetings be? Because school is starting this month. And parents have to prepare. People want to know. I certainly want to know, how many school uniforms do I need to purchase? I know the minister cannot tell me that, but how can you make these sorts of decisions in the absence of information? On the WhatsApp, there's someone who also asked, what is blended learning? As a parent, they want to know, what is this blended learning that their child is going to be undertaking when school reopens? So these are questions that I have an idea of what blended learning is because I work at the university, but most people will not know what it is or how it is even going to be implemented. So saying there will be a meeting is fine, but we need to have the meeting, and we need to have it fairly soon.
Yeah, I believe probably that they put it very, very soon, though, because they don't have much time before school comes.
What is blended learning?
Blended learning is when you have a combination of the face-to-face and the online. So it doesn't mean that you have some classes that are face-to-face and some that are online, but it may mean that elements of your teaching include technology. So you may ask students to do something online for a portion of the class and then something in the face-to-face setting. Sometimes you could also give students a part of what you plan to teach beforehand. So you could do the lesson beforehand and students are supposed to watch it. And then when you get to the classroom environment, you can do some kind of practical activity surrounding the theoretical element that you introduced previously. So it's supposed to bring a level of dynamism into the classroom so that you move away from, you know, the chalkboard, chalk and talk, as they call it. And you can have this interactivity. You can encourage students to use the technology for their learning as opposed to playing video games and taking pictures and doing TikTok and that kind of thing. But in this current environment, I am not certain if that is how this is being used. I think it is more being used to accommodate the social distancing and the pandemic rather than to innovate education as it is supposed to do. Maybe this will be a positive result of that, but that is what blended learning is supposed to be, in my understanding.
Yes.
Yes, caller. Yes, you're still here.
Now, also, I would like to know, what is all the talk about these buses, the electric buses?
Okay, what do you want to know about the talk?
I mean, to be quite honest with you, I believe the commuters who use these buses are well satisfied that the buses have come to Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see a drastic improvement as far as transportation is concerned.
So then it doesn't matter how the buses got here. Once...
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I believe that it eventually... I mean, and the press, they always believe that they or the government should come and tell us something, but that's the reason for the press. You must probe.
Mm-hmm.
And they should go and find out what they are asking about procurement and so on,
mm-hmm.
as far as buses is concerned. But I don't understand the fuss about the buses, because if you go into any bus terminals now, you'll see a drastic difference as far as transportation is concerned. And it's the commuters, who really welcome the buses, and especially the new service they have with the private I can't remember the exact name,
mm-hmm.
that helping the transport board as well. Let me tell you something, that service is exceptional.
So you're satisfied?
If I'm satisfied, let me tell you something. You see, drivers, I mean, I don't know who trained those drivers,
he's,
but let me tell you
something.
He's
saying that we have no right to call for more information. This man.
Only the press should call for the information.
We have to dig. Basic information. Look, we don't look for information for ourselves. We ask for that information on behalf of the public of Barbados.
And you
are one of these people who, under a previous administration, come on this program and lick them left, right, and center. For not bringing forward information, not being transparent and that sort of thing. But because it serves your purpose now, you have a completely different approach to how the public of Barbados should be treated. You should be ashamed.
But you should be ashamed too, because you as a journalist should go...
You should be ashamed. I have absolutely no shame about saying that if the public of Barbados has been calling for this information, we should not have to be going digging for it.
So the same way you as a journalist get digging left, right, and center for information.
Well, I pick and choose what I dig for.
You, David, should be ashamed.
I pick and choose what I dig for.
You should be one who should.
You got a lot of temerity to come saying that nobody in deserving the information. Yeah, you know, from the government of Barbados on this. Man, you had so much to say about the transport board.
I never said that. I said that you should go and get information the same way you do it, or the other ministers and this present government. You should go now and find who you want.
Well, they can't do everything. They got other journalists there.
But you should be ashamed to say
that. I ain't ashamed at all.
You know who should be.
No, I cannot imagine why the public of Barbados should not be able to ask for that kind of information rather than have people guessing and creating doubt and suspicion on something that should be a straightforward matter.
And like I said previously, like I said to you again, David, it's all well and good for you who would jump out of the office and drive, jump in a car and get home in 10 or 15 minutes.
You know that I know that there is nothing.
You know how you're saying that?
No, no, I just want to clarify for you.
Go ahead.
I want to clarify for you.
Go ahead.
I welcome the fact that the bus fleet has been expanded.
I welcome that fact.
But having said that, I as I suggested to you earlier, we know a lot of the stuff that has happened in the past. We know the questions that have been raised. All we are asking is for the government to satisfy the public that, you know, the procurement process has been X or Y, and don't just put us in a position where we must be, you know, put our confidence in the government in this regard and expect that everybody is going to do the right thing. Look, in the very early stages of this administration, we had a situation where trucks were imported for the SSA. And it created a situation where the Prime Minister was uncomfortable with the process. I mean, things can go wrong. It is not that the government sets out to create that environment, but you're dealing with people. So just satisfy the public of Barbados as to the procurement process. This is the administration that promise integrity in public life.
Let me say this to you. I find by the time these buses land in this country, they're all kind of negative things coming from certain people or forces in this country. And I see...
You're calling for consistency? It is consistency you're calling for on the issues of procurement?
You see a newborn Mercedes-Benz or a BMW coming to Barbados, and I see it for myself. And a short one, less than a week, you pass the highway, and the vehicle just shut down. And sometimes recently, something just went wrong with the bus. In fact, they get in an accident, some boy struck the bus, and you get all kind of negative comments coming on Facebook and social media concerning the bus. I believe a vast amount of people, negative people, who like you are the Democrat Labour Party supporters.
Like who?
Dear Vidalis. I honestly would like to see these buses just collapse.
But there's nothing that I have said that suggests that. I want to see them collapse, that I want to see them abandoned. I haven't said that.
Anyway, let me close by saying this. I hope they keep your moderator. She sounds pretty nice. And I hope that you will treat her good as well.
You know, I treat everybody well. The only people I get treated badly by people like you.
You know, last year you were training, as I know, to your moderator. You know, she abandoned you in the wake of things.
Who's that? Who abandoned us?
Maureen Holder, when she ran away from
you. Oh, you talk about, that's such a long time. She won't abandon us.
She ran away from you in less than 20
Well, listen, I don't see it that way, but even if it happened, let me say to you, there are so many people available in this country and who need to come forward and contribute to the whole discussion about matters in Barbados. And, you know, we talk a lot, for instance, about UE and that we need to get more people from the university, you know, communicating with the public and sharing their ideas. We have a lot of women in this country who have something to offer, who have something to say, and we need to have more people like them involved in the process. And what we have here is a variety. You don't want to create an environment where it's just one small group of people. You try to, even with people like you, I want more callers. I don't just want to hear your voice every day. You understand that?
Let me close by saying this to you, though. In fact, your moderator.
Yes, go ahead.
I want you to prepare for a Trinidadian voice. Brace yourself for her here.
All right, I'm ready. I'm ready for all voices.
Very negative. She's very negative, so you prepare for
her. You gotta brace yourself.
Well, that's the interpretation.
It is the politicians that come as callers. Those are the ones, they don't run for anything. But they are big supporters of these political parties in the country. And some of them believe that they are actually more powerful than the actual people who run for office. And this man that is talking here is one of them.
Well, we need to go and take a break. So thank you so much for your call. This is Down to Brass Tacks.